So there's a question that demands answering. Turn to Zephaniah. I think we've been challenged with something this morning that, let me say this. I think the worst thing that we can do is assume we're all seeking for something. We're told to seek for something. Zephaniah chapter 2. This is a word to Israel. This is not to the Gentiles. Zephaniah chapter 2, verse 1. Gather yourselves together, yea, gather together, O nation not desired. Now that presents a problem. Because Israel was a people that God had set his heart on. It was a people who he had chosen specifically for a specific purpose, and his heart was toward them to do them good. But something happened in the process of that relationship where they were no longer, their life was not desirable to God anymore, even though they were a people under covenant. The life was not, God did not desire what he saw in them. I have to look at myself. I'll have to look at us and say, God, you've called us with a special, unique calling into a relationship where you can express your life through perfectly. We've been chosen. We've been elected. We've been given a grace that's beyond anything I've ever known. We've experienced it. And if anybody has a capacity for the potential of God revealing his life through us, we've heard it. We've been given a grace that I don't know of anybody else. And of course, all of us are limited knowing of what God is doing. God does so many things in secret, so we don't know half what God's doing. But one thing I know is what he's done here with us. There's no question about that. But in our response to what God has done, how desirable are we to God? Is he still just desiring us? When he looks, is he just so pleased that he just wants that relationship, or has the life diminished to the point where it's not attractive to God like what it really should be? So he says, this is the word to a nation that's not all that desirable anymore because of the way relationships have gone. Relationship with one another and relationship with him. He says this, before the decree, verse 2, bring forth, before the day pass as the chaff, before the fierce anger of the Lord come upon you, before the day of the Lord's anger come upon you, there's something you want to do. There's something you want to do. Before this final revealing and this final impartation and this final measure of God's grace toward us to enable us to finish. Before this final step, he says this, seek the Lord. Seek the Lord. Seek the Lord, all ye meek of the earth, which have wrought his judgment. One thing about an arrogant person doesn't seek the Lord. An arrogant person seeks his own. But love doesn't seek its own. That's why the meek, this word meek is the gentle. Gentle. Easily entreated, easily entreating. Coming up alongside, like you were talking about, seeing somebody down low and in a bad, difficult place, just come up alongside them. Like Jesus when he had compassion. He didn't just say, well, I understand your problem. But he had compassion in that it motivated him to do something about it. It motivated him to come up alongside and lift us up out. That's why the love of God, when he first touched you, he didn't do it because he felt sorry for you. He had compassion on you and wanted to lift you out. It's one thing to be sorry for somebody. You know, I'm really sorry, you, whatever. But it's something else to be motivated to because I know how it is. If you're, that there was an airplane crash just east of us. When was that? Saturday night? Friday night? Friday night. An airplane crash, 2 people killed. And I can relate this to flying. If you're in a certain attitude and it's getting you in trouble, you have to relate to that airplane based on the attitude and condition it's in. You might be in cloud and have all the instruments telling you you're in a steep descending turn. And if you don't fix it, you're going to kill yourself. But you can, and I was in that when I was getting instruction. They put a shield over your eyes so you can't see outside. All you can see is these instruments in front of you. And the instructor took the airplane and again, and I felt it turn, and then I felt it adjust and go straight again. But do you know what was happening? What was happening was this: I felt it turn, and he held it in the turn, but my body said, "This is normal, everything's okay." So now we're in a little turn, and about the time my body got used to it, he turned it some more, and my body got used to it, and I said, "Oh, he corrected it again." And then he put the nose down a little bit. And I thought, oh, we're descending. And my body adjusted to the descent. And I seen these instruments telling me exactly that we were turning and turning and descending. That's what the instrument said. But everything in my body said everything is straight and level. My response to the airplane to save my life, I mean, I wasn't critical. He was there. He was seeing. He had done this on purpose. But if I would have been alone, it's hard to believe what the instruments tell you when everything in your body, everything you feel, tells you it's okay. But you see, it tells us okay because we're used to it. And so we come under the delusion that everything's okay. Meanwhile, the instruments that God has given toward us to tell us we have a problem developing, it goes right over our heads because we're feeling like everything is okay. It's the grace that wakes us up and says everything's not okay. So if we're seeking, if we are actually participating in what God is doing, we will not just become accustomed to everything and convince ourselves everything's okay when it's not. We'll respond accordingly. I don't know what happened to that, why that airplane crashed. There was no wind, there was no cloud. I don't know. May have been a mechanical thing. But it just started me thinking again about my own life. That because it's comfortable and we're used to it, Satan say, well, that's him. That's how he is. This is how we'll live to be, so we can be at peace. And we have to, and we put, the instructor would take these little suction cup pads, and he'd put it over an instrument to where I couldn't see the instrument anymore. And he just slowly began to eliminate one instrument after another until about all I had was a turn and bank. Is telling us that something's off kilter, but because we've adjusted to the feeling, we think everything's okay. The answer is to seek the Lord. If you have a gentle heart, you'll seek the Lord, and you will be one of those that are participating in what He says is true. That's right living, right relationship, not right performance. If the performance is the issue, that's really easy because we can perform right here And then when we're out of that situation, we can perform over here, and we become no more than actors. Jesus called them hypocrites. Hypocrites in Matthew, he talked about, I think it was to the hypocrites, scribes and Pharisees. He said, you hypocrites, you've done the tithe of all these insignificant, they're not insignificant because they're important, these tithes of coming. Performance does. It gets you to do the little insignificant things so I can say, look what I've done. I've done this and I've done. I am really involved in the detail. But right living, right relationship has nothing to do with trying to measure up to some important little standard of a tithe of something very small. It has to do with right relationship. Doesn't mean it always looks perfect. Doesn't mean it always looks pretty. But it's right relationship. You don't want to stop there. Seek meekness. Wow. Seek meekness. How? Normally, when we're in pursuit of ourselves, the last thing we really seek is meekness. We seek control, which sometimes has to get aggressive and hard. But to those that wake up and realize that there is a work yet to be done, there's a measure of God yet to be received, we will be seeking Him with all of our heart, that we don't miss the final visitation, that everything is current, that we've sought the Lord with our whole heart, and that we've engaged with everything that God has called us to engage in. You see, this waiting on God, waiting on, you know, like sometimes we wait. Sometimes we wait for the little Keurig thing to make that cup of coffee. But in all the waiting, there's something in common. There's an expectation. It's not like we're just sitting there thinking, well, maybe sometime we think it'll never happen, but there's normally an expectation for something, that something's going to happen. And when you're waiting on God, you're seeking the reality of something that you know is coming. Waiting and seeking are very connected. Very connected. You will not be waiting on God is not a passive sit down and do nothing kind of thing. Waiting on God is very active as you're seeking the reality of what you know is coming. It's an expectation that you know is coming. In simple terms, sometimes you hit that little carrot, that little button, and you go and you wait and you go over there and you're looking and sure enough it's half full. Well, you don't just go running off somewhere else and so close, right. We're going to want to be actively engaged. The last thing we want to do is feel comfortable, right, and push away anything that messes up our comfort zone. We don't want anybody putting stickies over the instruments that are telling us there's a problem. Really, we don't. We want everything open so we can see exactly where we are, so that our reactions, and I say reactions purposefully, because We must react, not spontaneous, not out of habit, but we must react and respond according to the reality that we see. So, seek meekness. It may be that you will be hid in the day of the Lord's anger. It may be. You see, it's not a guarantee. The guarantee is, if I'm seeking the Lord with all my heart, and I'm engaged with what He's saying, not with the things that make me comfortable. How many people just love when your life gets messed right up? I didn't hear anybody say yes. Does that? We can pray for him. We can talk to him. We can encourage him. We can laugh with him. We can cry with him. But the bottom line is, you have to go through it. One of the healthiest things God can do for us is to mess up our comfort zone to where we can just exist in a equilibrium, to where everything now is stable and it's all good. Somebody asked me recently, why did you really leave Whitehorse? I'd like to know that myself. Why did you really leave Partridge Creek? You'd like to. Started, and he blessed, and he used to touch lives over and over and over. A context, a place where God did mighty things. Why did it was true? Because God was actively engaged in taking the blinders out of our eyes, helping us to see the reality, and not letting us get comfortable in just a 9-to-5 job where everything was good and we could just pay our bills and everything. It put us in a place where we had to begin to relate. You couldn't just have pressure in the home and go run down to Tim Horton for a break and get a cup of coffee. Change the atmosphere. No, you were stuck. God said, move out. Leave it. Leave it. Some people said, oh, we failed. Oh, really? Well, would you rather have it be said, we did it perfect? Nobody believes that. But you know, it's not a matter of having done it perfect or having done it wrong. God takes something, and I think about the tabernacle that Moses built. God made sure he did everything according to the pattern. Perfect. Specifically, everything had to be done exactly the way God said it. And they did it. It was built exactly the way God said it. And it was perfect. And it was so perfect that the glory of the Lord, the presence of God, was in that little holy of holies. So something that perfect that God himself said to build, and said that they must take it with them, and it had to be treated a certain way. Something that perfect, there came a time when God says, it's done. I'm finished with that. Now we're going to have this. And there's a song, put out the fire. Here comes the glory. Talking about the new covenant. Jesus Christ came as a perfect sacrifice. So put out the fire, and that old sacrifice that was done exactly the way God wanted it done. It was perfect. Time to put out that fire because it's time to move on. It's not a matter of being able to say, well, you did it perfect, so therefore God's wrong in shutting it down. Neither is it any more correct to say you did it wrong. That's why God's shutting it down. God, you guys didn't fail up there at Partridge. You didn't fail. It's finished. God finishes things not because they're done perfectly or not done perfectly. He shuts them down because finished with it. And certain times in your life, God has you involved in an activity or a work or relationships with one another, and God says, I'm finished with that now, so I want you to change. I want this to happen. Not because you did it wrong. Not because you did it right. Not because you fulfilled it perfectly, but he says, I'm finished with it. It's time to move on. And if we have a heart, if we're seeking the Lord and his right relationship in our lives, the time can come when God can shut anything down he wants. He can start anything he wants. And we'll just say, yes, Lord. Yes, Lord, it's okay, whatever you want. That's being in a relationship, and in that attitude, God Himself gives us a measure of His grace that we've never known. See, we don't need grace to go through what we all know and have the ability to do already. We don't seek the Lord when our routine is easily managed. I don't anyway. When my routine is easily managed, I've learned, I've gotten what I need for this routine, and I don't need or I'm just conscious that it's not like what I thought it was. So God comes along, and you know what He does? He does what He always does so well. That word for what we need in our life to take us on and to finish the next course. Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 1. This is really being intense on seeing what God is doing in your life and in His church. And I've just got a couple verses and I'm going to quit. Habakkuk chapter what He will say unto me. Now that's a pretty good statement. That's a pretty good attitude to have. I'm gonna stand where I belong. I'm going. And I will watch to see what He will say unto me. I want to know what you're saying. And you don't hear it by being a casual listener. But that's just the first part. The second part is, and what I shall answer when I am reproved or corrected of Him. We don't know how we're going to respond. We really don't. Have you ever encountered situations where you were surprised at your response? Why? Why were we surprised at our response? It's because we really don't know ourselves like sometimes we think we do. And so something happens. Oh, He's going to say it. But more than that, the most interesting thing is, the most telling thing is going to be, I will, and what I will answer when I'm corrected of Him, when God says, oh, we need to make a little adjustment in the life here. How are you going to deal with that? I think we can probably all honestly say, God, you need to do some changing in my life. We can probably all honestly say, oh, yes, Lord, there's some things down deep that have been hidden, and Lord, there's some things here that need to be fixed. Well, when He comes and shows up on the scene because you've been seeking Him and waiting on Him, and God's waiting on you to come seeking Him, that but you don't understand. Well, we say, I've always been this way, and you used me. I've always been this way, and you anointed me. I've always been this way, even when I did some great things for you. This is how I was. So what's wrong with it now? Why can't I just stay the same? Well, the problem is, because of a new measure of grace, it takes a new measure of responsibility, and the two must be together. The life of obedience must measure up and must match the measure of grace. And if we want God to bring us another measure of grace, the final measure, there must be with it a discovery of how we're going to respond when He does show up with that final measure. It's yet to be known how I shall answer when I'm reproved. And He says, here's a measure of grace now to change for this final change. I wonder if our ability Yes, good, we're going to make some changes here. There's always, in my life, in my work, get a new phone and see how that goes for you. Change, just little change can be so difficult sometimes. And I pray that I have, and I'm sure it will be, because God always brings the grace to enable us, if we will, to measure up to the life that's expected that must match the kind of grace he brings to us at the very end. I love a verse later down in that, and I'm going to close on this. Verse 14. For the earth shall be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. It is going to happen. It's a sure thing. God can't lie. Question is, what are you seeking? Are you seeking to be part of that? Are you willing to lose everything you've ever known, everything you ever had? Or will we be like Job for a good part of his life and the dealings of God when he justified himself? But the amazing thing was, and I think the encouraging part is, when he had his final visitation, he said, aha, now I got something that's given me the ability to abhor myself and repent, to change. Every one of us in this room can change, no matter what. Every one of in us, to us, and through us.